Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
It's a moment that remains frozen in history when the Mercedes carrying Diana, Princess of Wales, spun fatally out of control on the Pont de l'Arma tunnel in Paris in August 1997. The world was shocked by what appeared to be a terrible accident. But 2 decades later, the circumstances surrounding what really happened that night, and crucially, why it happened, remains mired in suspicion, controversy, and misinformation until now. Dylan Howard and Colin McLaren have re-examined all of the evidence surrounding Diana's death, official documents, eyewitness testimony, and Diana's own private journals, as well as amassing dozens of new interviews with investigators, witnesses, and those closest to the princess to ask one very simple question. Was the death of Princess Diana a tragedy or treason? Diana case solved, the definitive account and evidence that proves what really happened is a book coming out on the 17th of September by Scarlet Horse Publishing. It's by Dylan Howard and Colin McLaren. Joining me in Australia, Colin McLaren himself. Colin, it's good morning to me. It must be good evening to you.
It is. It's about 7:30, John.
Well, good to have you with us. It is the most shocking event. It was the event that defined a decade. Everybody can remember, somewhat like Kennedy, what they were doing when they heard the news of Diana's death. It would seem to be a case that was a tragic accident. Your book proves that there is more to this than previously thought.
Yeah, I agree with you, actually. If you look at last century, two things stand out most as far as deaths are concerned. It is JFK, you're right. And it's also Lady Diana. Those two are heads and shoulders above anything else. But we've studied Lady Diana and Dylan and myself and a whole crew of people, and we've got some interesting facts and figures to throw at people through the book, and also we're doing a podcast. So there is a story to be told here, and it's a shocking story.
Why did you decide then? What made you look further? Because, I mean, obviously, in the aftermath, after the outpouring of the huge outpouring of international grief, it was pretty much decided that it was a combination of factors, a drunken driver going too fast through the tunnel, and this would seem to be a tragic accident. What made you and the team want to look back and amass further information?
Well, I started with this particular inquiry back in 1997 itself. I was a detective sergeant. I've been with homicide and done cold cases and mass murders and investigations in Australia for a long, long time as a real detective. And I remember I was home renovating way back then in 1997, and I got so annoyed as I watched the television what the French were doing or not doing. They were just messing it up. They were making a complete disaster of what they should be doing at a crime scene. And I got so angry, I jumped a plane at my own expense and flew to Paris. And I spent 21 days in Paris doing my own crime scene assessment, measurements and photographs and notebooks, and speaking to everybody and trying to understand what really went on. And 21 days later, I got enough to go back to Australia and know exactly what happened. And unfortunately, way back then, the French ignored it all. And I don't think they've really paid any attention to it since. But there is a definitive set of answers on this particular death of Lady Diana and her two companions.
You think it's perhaps because the French were almost paralysed with the enormity that there was no more famous woman in the world in the 90s. Mm. I mean, she was an icon, she was an inspiration to millions, and to be faced with the death of somebody who is an icon, rather than being police officers first and investigative forensic scientists or whatever first, they became almost the modern parlance would be sort of fanboys. They were shocked that she was dead in their city.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, but I actually think it's worse than that, Charles. I actually think they were just arrogant and didn't really see the significance of this woman, this, I guess, most popular woman on the planet, dying in such tragic circumstances in their city. They didn't seem to embrace it, and they were very laissez-faire, and they ignored so many of the principles and procedures that you would expect with a death of this particular type. Like, say, today, for example, if you look at the most popular figure in the world, back then it was Lady Diana. Say it was Donald Trump and he was driving through the same tunnel. You would think that if he succumbed to a set of circumstances and like a car accident and died, that would throw everything at it. Maybe they would. Maybe they still wouldn't. Lady Diana, it was treated with such arrogance. Maybe they didn't respect her as a woman, but it was a disaster, and I went through crime scenes for 20 years. I know how serious they are, and you've got to apply your principles and procedures. But with Lady Diana, I don't know. They were out to lunch, or they were half asleep. They just didn't get on with what they were supposed to be doing. And I think today it might be a different set of circumstances, but back then it was very, very poor procedure by them.
Do you mean that they allowed the crime scene to become contaminated, as they say, or they just didn't take
Yes.
Explain a little bit more about then what you've... I mean, you got on a plane of your own expense. You flew over there, presumably, sort of 24, 48, a few days later. What did you find, and what did you find that the French authorities had been missing, or had they just gone drunken driver, paparazzi snapping photographs? That was what happened.
Well, your last comments are spot on. They dismissed it as just the paparazzi chasing a couple of celebrities around town. Yet, if you look at some of the witnesses, whether they're right or wrong, some of the people that were walking by and heard things, saw things, there was many calls back on day one. There was a tragedy. There was suggestion there was bombs or sounds of shots or explosions and flashings of light. All these sensational things were being said in day one. Now, if you remember back then, seven paparazzi were arrested, and they were arrested for manslaughter, and they were taken to custody for 3 or 4 days, and they had their film and the camera and everything and their motorbikes seized. So if you've arrested somebody, the first thing you've got to realise the area that you've arrested them from, it's a crime scene. So therefore, you've got to adopt crime scene principles and procedures. You've got to seal it off. You've got to throw forensics and all sorts of experts and measurements and photographs and video. They did none of that. They arrested 7 people, held them for 3 or 4 days. Lady Diana, her body was taken. She died on the way to the hospital. And her two companions were taken away, and the car was dumped on a low loader and bounced through the streets of Paris, uncovered. All sorts of exhibits would have been lost and misplaced. And then the street sweepers came in and they hosed down the tunnel, and there was no attention to crime scene principles at all. And then the peak hour traffic came running through again. it was bizarre. It was like, you know, it's almost surreal. But this is what happened. And this is what got me to fly over there and think, well, this is madness. This is going to be another JFK with all sorts of conspiracy theories forever. So that's the backdrop to what really happened.
I mean, that we remember the, you know, the death by paparazzi charge. We also remember the, and, you know, when I was reading through my notes before doing this interview, you know, something went ping in the back of my head because the mysterious white Fiat, and I'd forgotten about that. But, you know, at the time, people were wondering, you know, what would, and I imagine listeners now going, oh, yeah, I remember that too. There was talk of a white Fiat. Just put that into context about the background behind that and why suddenly it was a story. And now it seems to have been almost been forgotten about.
Yeah. Well, when you look at what the French did or didn't do, they just swept it all down and let the traffic run through again. So there was no attention to crime scene. So when I got there a couple of days later, And I come from a heavy crime scene background, and also my lecturing at detective training school was for crime scene management. So I just went straight into sort of automatic pilot and got on with measuring and photographing and video and notebooks and did the whole thing. And I never saw a single French policeman or detective in the entire area of the crime scene. And I spent 21 days there. But on the first day or two, what I found was skid marks, really bright black skid marks on the roadway leading into the tunnel. And they're undeniably fresh. And then there was a little merge lane. And a merge lane is sort of an entry lane that comes from a quiet little sort of side street into a busy highway. And what we had was a busy highway. And this merge lane, this is where the exact point where the skid marks were. So that told me as a detective that somebody applied the brakes really, really heavily here at this merge lane because somebody was coming in on top of them. So that means it's a two-car collision. It's pretty simple stuff. And if you look at the skid marks, which I photographed, if you look at the tread marks on the skid, those skid marks, they were not just single lines in a row in parallel. There were some bubble marks or bulge marks, which meant, and if you analyse them, that that's the point of contact of another car and coming from the right-hand side. So it was all pretty basic stuff. And then if you also look at the entrance to the tunnel, it falls away. It drops down about sort of 2.5 metres over a distance of about 38 metres. So it's a significant fall away, but and therefore you've got a retaining wall on the left or right of this roadway. Now, if you look at the right-hand side of the retaining wall, there's a capping which runs along the top of it, and there was this big 3.5 metre tyre residue on top of this capping. So if you look at the skid marks, and then in front of it is this fall-away road and this capping with this dirty big tyre residue, the car had to have been airborne. So what I found out through my analysis was that Princess Diana in her car, her Mercedes, it took off. It skidded at that merge lane, then took off because the road fell away, and was airborne, and then hit the capping, left its tyre residue from the tyres, then crashed down on the road again and pinged into the tunnel and came to rest at the 13th pillar. And from that point on, they were all dead. All of this evidence, this is forensic evidence, Giles.
Yeah.
All of this evidence is totally missing from any of the French reports. They missed a lot because they took no interest from the beginning.
And I suppose the easiest thing to do is just blame A, the paparazzi, and B, the toxicology report that was carried out on the driver when it was found that he was well over the limit itself. And also you're looking at the structural integrity of the car as well.
Yep. And therefore, no one pays any attention to the little car coming along the merge lane that crashed into Lady Diana's car. And as you mentioned 5 minutes ago, That's the white Fiat Uno. And the world's forgotten about that. So we kept persevering, and 22 years later, we actually got to meet, got to find the driver and the owner of this white Fiat Uno. And I'm the only person in the world to have ever spoken to him. And I've spoken to him twice now. And the last time was about 2 months ago. And we spoke to the man that actually crashed into Lady Diana. And it's not his fault. He's completely innocent. He just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time when this juggernaut of this Mercedes was driving so fast in the hands of a man that was so drunk. This is Henri Paul, the driver of the Mercedes. He was so drunk, and he was also full of pharmaceutical drugs. He was completely out of control. And this poor little Fiat Uno comes along and crashes into him, and there's the accident, and there's all part of causation, and the car gets airborne and crashes down, and the 13th pillar, and it's all over.
That's quite sensational to you to speak to the driver of the Fiat Uno. I mean, presumably, there must have been contact marks of this white. You would expect white paint to be on the Mercedes. You know, there would be an impact mark from where the Mercedes had collected, if you like, and launched off at the Fiat Uno.
Yeah, you've got a very good understanding there, Giles, of forensics, and that's exactly what happened. The black Mercedes, which was Lady Diana's car, on the right-hand side from the front where the headlight is, back towards the door, the front door of the car, there was this long strip of white paint. Now, when you analyse that white paint, it comes up to a paint that's called Bianco 240. Now, Bianco 240 paint colour is assigned to the Fiat Motor Car Company and their Fiat Unos. So we had all of that as well to go by. So what happens is, as you know, the great forensic maxim, I guess, every contact leaves a trace. So the Fiat Uno, the white Fiat Uno that was innocently coming along the merge lane, crashes into Diana's car, the black Merc, and leaves its white paint along the side of it. And it's there forever. And that helped us to prove that these two cars were in contact that particular night. And it's undeniable. And I put that to the owner of the car twice when I saw him as late as 4 years ago when I spoke to him twice.
I'll obviously let people listen to your podcast and get hold of the book to find out more about this, but you begs the question, why did the driver didn't come forward, or was he told to stay away? And also, you know, we've never heard anything from the one survivor inside the Mercedes, you know, the personal protection officer, who you think would have spotted that Henri Paul was not driving correctly, you know, a highly trained close protection officer.
Yeah, the security guy that was in the Mercedes, he had, the security of Princess Diana in his hands. And you would think if he was doing his job properly that he might want to look at the driver of this Mercedes. He had never seen him before, never worked with him before. He might want to sort of look at him and, perhaps assess him in some way. Because Henri Paul was drunk. There's no doubt about that. He was 0.174%, and he was also full of pharmaceutical pills and Prozac, which that lethal contact is really quite an issue here. This security guy didn't bother to sort of assess all of this, and he just let it all happen. And of course, he was part of the accident, the shocking accident. And he's left with amnesia for the rest of his life. He can't remember the accident or anything leading up to it, so therefore he can't remember his decision making or what his thoughts might have been or what his duty of care was. And I guess that's up to him. But it's a bit disappointing. But He's got amnesia, so that, so be it. But as far as the fear that Uno is concerned, there's no issues of drunkenness or drugs or amnesia there. And we were able to track down the driver of that particular car, and he told us something sensational only 2 months ago, which I don't think anybody in the media is aware of yet, Giles, except for yourself and your listeners. But he actually told us that he was told way back then by the French police not to assist the English detectives trying to understand what happened in this accident, not to play any part in helping the police unravel the cause of the accident. And that's shocking.
So basically what you're saying is, on order of the French authorities, the man who was the person who was driving the Fiat Punto that caused the fatal crash that took the life of Diana, Princess of Wales, was instructed not to cooperate with the British authorities.
That's correct. But he didn't actually cause the accident. Let's be clear here. He was driving along, just like you and I would one day, one night, innocently, on a merge lane coming into a very fast-moving highway. It was a crazed driver of the Mercedes, Henri Paul, who was full of alcohol and pharmaceutical drugs. That was a juggernaut out of control. So we have a Fiat Uno that's innocent to all of this. But as innocent as he might be, he does not have amnesia or alcohol or drugs in his system. He could tell us a lot of things. He could tell us everything about that accident. Even though he's innocent, he could help us understand what really happened. But the French police told him, don't help the English investigators. Now, that is bizarre.
That's bizarre is one way of putting it. I mean, the conspiracy theorists are obviously have had a field day with this. One of the things that also springs to mind was, you know, I remember the run-up to these events. And Diana, if Diana had been in the firm, as they call the royal family, if she'd been a much-loved, loving wife and mother of Prince Charles, etc., but she had split with... she split with Charles. I mean, the marriage was in breakdown. She was now having a very public affair with Dodi Fayed. There was talk of her leaving, of marriage. I mean, I remember seeing the pictures and imagining her being sort of one of those, excuse my language, but Eurotrash royalty, having a millionaire's lifestyle, Monte Carlo, that sort of stuff. She had run high-profile pictures, high-profile campaigns of landmines. She'd said she wanted to be the princess of people's hearts. She was really proving to be a thorn in the side of the establishment.
Yeah, and she was becoming her own woman too, and she had some certain issues that was getting up the nose, I guess, of the establishment, particularly big business in France and in Great Britain, where they make landmines and armoury. And she took on this cause of going against the landmines, and she her good friend Simon Simmons went to Bosnia and saw the effects of landmines. And came back and told Diana, and Diana then analysed the photographs that she was given of some of the atrocities and some of the injuries to kids and innocent people. And she was angered by this and then took this on as a cause of hers, as did she take on the cause of AIDS and HIV. So Lady Diana was a controversial figure just before her death. So there's all sorts of, I guess, suggestions that perhaps people wanted her out of the way. But I think at the end of the day, Giles, it was just a really tragic accident. But unfortunately, it's been concealed by the French authorities.
The book is called Diana, Case Solved, The Definitive Account and Evidence That Proves What Really Happened. It's by Dylan Howard and Colin McLaren, who I'm speaking to today. Colin, the book is out on the 17th of September with Skyhorse Publishing, but there is a podcast. If people want to find out more information about the case and the shocking revelations, where do they go online?
Yeah, if you're into podcasts, please go onto your podcast application. There's so many of them these days. And search out Fatal Voyage, Diana, Case Solved. That's our particular tag. We've done a number of podcasts now, but this one is all about Lady Diana. If you want the answers to as to what really happened, there's a 12-part series. It's each part is 30 minutes, typical podcasts, all audio. So if you go online and just download, watch on your normal app provider, and you'll come out of this after 12 episodes knowing exactly what went on with the death of Lady Diana.
Diana Case Solved Fatal Voyage. It's by Colin McLaren. Colin, it's been a pleasure to speak to you today.
Thank you, as always. Thank you.
Stop the podcast!
Stop the podcast!
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.